Hello, everyone. This is Sal from Bitcoin Taxes. Welcome to our podcast. Each episode, we speak to an expert with knowledge related to cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Our guest today is Alon Murak. Alon is the CEO and co-founder of Blocks, a crypto accounting platform. Alon was a code contributor to Bitcoin and Ethereum, developed his own multi-sig peer-to-peer wallet, and later co-founded Blocks.io in 2017, where he serves as the company's chief executive officer. Alon is here today to discuss and elaborate on the complexities of crypto accounting based on his company's in-depth crypto CPA expert report. Alon, thanks for being here today.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Awesome. And can you give us a little bit more background about yourself?
Sure. So I've been in the space for around 6 years now. I'm a developer, so this is how I got my start. I really got fascinated with the technology and really the way it works and the elegant solution blockchain is. And so I started just to dig in, tried to and contributed some code to Bitcoin a few years ago, and then worked a bit on Ethereum, developed my own wallet along the way, and then about 2 years ago co-founded Blocks.
And so Blocks is focused on crypto accounting, right?
Blocks is really a crypto asset management platform. We are an A to Z back office for the financial guys in the organization, the operations, and really a tool for them to use from tracking their assets all the way to reporting, gain loss calculation, accounting, as you've mentioned, and more to follow. We really see a need where, professionals managing assets really need a powerful tool to kind of bridge the gap between their own operation, which might be very varied, and obviously the traditional world of reporting, audit, and so forth.
Both of us are in the industry. We know that crypto accounting is difficult. What would you say makes crypto accounting so difficult?
I think mostly it's a very new technology. With new technologies, you have a lot of edge cases, you have a lot of complexity, and that complexity takes a while to kind of sink in and to people to really create kind of, best practices around it. But also I think from in order for us to move and create those best practices, we really need to have technology work for us. With all the advancements of blockchain, the technologies for now is very raw in terms of the actual services and products you can use in order to, even run your own crypto company. Mm-hmm. Simple tasks like, keeping track of your assets, reporting them, auditing them, and even, calculating how much tax you need to pay, all of those things. You have a lot of tools in the traditional world, companies as big as Intuit with QuickBooks and so on. They had tens of years to develop those solutions, but here in the crypto space, we didn't really have those, don't have the tools now, and obviously didn't have the time for kind of maturing those tools. And because the underlying technology is so different than the traditional system, you have to kind of reinvent those tools. And I really see them as a fundamental tool in order for us to grow the space because, at the end of the day, innovation comes from repetition, right? From 1,000 different ideas, maybe one will become big. In order to get those repetitions as cheap as possible, in order for us to have not just one Coinbase in Binance, but maybe 10 and 20 and 100 of them, we have to have those repetitions really, really cheap and do them really, really cheap. And so services like Blocks and others obviously take down the cost of running your own crypto company, trying to have an idea, and even being just compliant with what the regulators are asking from you. And so I really think it's fundamental for us to have tools like those because otherwise it's very expensive and very expensive and very risky to run a crypto company. And we see it from our clients and we see how much value they get from, good tools to use. And so I think it's definitely that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had mentioned Intuit. So my question to you is when you're dealing with companies like Intuit and, like TurboTax companies that deal with traditional taxes and have been established for a while, do you find that they are hesitant to deal with crypto-based companies? Because on my end, from what I see, it seems like a lot of traditional companies are still kind of just waiting to see. I mean, we all know crypto's legitimate, here to stay, the future. Of course, in the industry, we all know that. But people outside of the industry, it does feel like they're still kind of waiting and watching to make sure that crypto is in fact a legitimate industry. Do you feel that way, or do you think that that's kind of going away?
I think it's really kind of the nature of, you know, humanity. I mean, if you look at, for example, social networks, which have been around for probably 15 years or even more, you know, anyone who's above, let's say, 60 years old doesn't really understand why young people need to have all their lives displayed online for everyone to see. But, you know, for a 14-year-old, it's completely normal. It's not doing that is the abnormal thing. And I think that, you know, if we're looking at crypto, I think that, you know, the real kind of target audience for it is not really me and you. It's really the person who is maybe 14 or 13 years old now, because when they're 18 and they'll go and open their first bank account, they will, for the first time in modern history, will have an actual alternative for the traditional money system. And that's a big concept to grasp. And I think that, you know, it takes a while for such big ideas to sink in. And so I think that, you know, in probably 10 years, for those people who are 13 now, for them, it will look absolutely normal to have a normal bank account and a crypto wallet holding some of their assets and have different functionality to it. And for us, it looks very avant-garde and very new, but for them, it will be just part of life. And I think that, you know, it just takes time to sink in, because it's really a monumental change. And, you know, those things take time.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. And I definitely agree with that. So recently you conducted one of the first surveys of crypto-focused CPAs. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we have a bunch of partners that work with us. You know, they use our software, they refer clients, their clients to us to use blocks and so on. And so we thought it would be a great idea to see what they think on the kind of the best practices and kind of what are their difficulties. First of all, for us to learn, but also obviously we publish it, so we want, you know, everyone else to see as well. At the end of the day, it's really down to the uncertainty. The uncertainty really drives, you know, decision-making in this space, because when things are uncertain, everything becomes a bit riskier. When you don't have the right tools, which obviously are based on best practices, it becomes, again, even riskier. And I think that's kind of the biggest pain, or kind of what I take from the report, is really that that's kind of the, you know, the battleground they're facing, because a lot of the things they're doing for the first time. And so there's a lot of uncertainty around it, and everything becomes just harder, even the simple tasks. And I think that's the biggest challenge they have today. Also, I'll add that I think that, again, for the first time kind of in modern history, you know, accountants, CPAs, anyone who's, you know, in the financial sector or operations center, they have to become almost half a developer, because the technology moves so fast and there's so many use cases which are very different from what they, you know, they know from traditional the financial world, that they really need to learn and understand the technology. And so it started with simple things like what's the difference between an airdrop and just a normal deposit. But now you have smart contracts, which are very capable. You have various financial instruments, like the centralized finance instruments, like you know, companies like Compound and IDEX and so on. And so they really need to keep alert on all of those things and make sure that, you know, when they see a transaction, when they see a value being moved, they actually categorize it as the right financial impact or financial result on the balance sheet. And I think that's a big challenge as well. So you have the uncertainty of, you know, the kind of the common things everyone is doing, but you also have those new things that are popping all the time, that are so far beyond anything the regulator even considering in, you know, just making official, that you still need to be very alert of, you know, the environment, the technology, and so on.
Right. There's so many nuances to crypto trading now. And like you just mentioned, there's new technologies and new uses of these technologies happening every day. And if they haven't even caught up with where we're at right now, and every day new things are being created, it definitely does seem tough for those regulatory agencies. They definitely need to get on the ball and have some teams and some experts in those teams figuring out what to do.
Definitely. I mean, again, if we'll take an analogy from kind of, you know, the social network era, You know, the regulator only now kind of catches up with privacy when you're talking about social networks and the internet in general. And, you know, the social networks have been around for 15, maybe even more years. Obviously, the internet much longer than that. And only now we're actually seeing policies being implemented about privacy and so on. And so, you know, it takes a lot of time. At the end of the day, you know, I think that the first thing that regulator wants to do is no harm. So, you know, if they'll go ahead too quickly before things are settled down and actually understand what's happening, then, you know, you can cause a lot of harm. And so a lot of the time they're just waiting. And a lot of the times they actually are asking the industry itself, how do you want to be treated? How do you want to be regulated? Because truly they do not necessarily all the time know what even they want to achieve.
Yeah, that's a great comparison between social media. I know you used it earlier, and it really is a great comparison. And it really, when you think about it, took forever for regulatory agencies to really start pushing policy about online privacy. But I mean, obviously, look at Facebook. Yeah. You know, they've been fined a few times, and they've changed their policies as a result of those, you know, punishments from, you know, regulatory agencies. But it took forever. I mean, it really took years and years and years and years for that to happen.
I think that Facebook is learning as well. I mean, I can bet when Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook, he would not have imagined the challenges he was facing now. I mean, who would have thought that, you know, you can potentially rig elections, yeah, you know, influence politics? I mean, you know, it's something unheard of, you know, 10 years ago. And so I think that, you know, again, because the technology enables us to move very fast, sometimes it takes time to understand what's the right thing to do. And obviously blockchain is not different in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would be your main advice then to CPAs looking to get into crypto accounting?
I think that the first thing is really obviously to read as much as you can and understand the nuances, mm-hmm, but really to adopt technology as fast as you can and avoid manual work. Although it's very tempting because, you know, there's a lot of tools missing. But one of the key things we're saying all the time is that when you're talking about you know, assets, money, and so on, usually you have two main things you're dealing with, obviously. One is being audited, and obviously then, you know, paying taxes. And both of those things, when you do your books and decide and calculate how much taxes you need to pay, that's happens now. But usually the IRS or the kind of equivalent in every state and every country, you know, they have time to catch up and check your books and check your calculations, you know, 2, 3, maybe 7 years, again, depending on where you are. And so, you know, if you'll do things by hand, it's almost absolutely guarantees you'll have mistakes. And they will use technology which will be available in 5 years, and you're using, you know, your pen and pencil right now. And so it's not a good way to go about it, especially when, you know, considering how easy and cheap it is to open as many wallets as you want, transfer assets between them, you know, obviously the variety of assets. You need to make sure that you employ technology, obviously like blocks, to your advantage, and make sure that you reduce a lot of the risk when it comes to, you know, just managing those assets. And so I think that's kind of the second advice I'll do.
Yeah, I think education. I think, like you said, learning everything, even just as simple as learning what a taxable event is and understanding what events constitute a taxable event. I think that's just probably the most basic thing you should learn if you're trading crypto. And that's for anybody. That's for, obviously, a crypto CPA needs to know that, but any trader even needs to understand, hey, if I'm using my crypto for this, is it taxed? And can I transfer this without being taxed? And people really, yeah, need to understand that kind of stuff, you know?
And in exactly in that point, you can actually employ technology, because if you have something like blocks that can detect transfers between your two wallets or two accounts, then you have all the proof in the world to go and then say to the IRS or to anyone, look, this is a transfer. You can actually see that. It's a trustable software. Others are using it. It's marked as a transfer. You know, I'm feeling much more confident in saying that instead of, you know, doing everything manually, which almost all the time guarantees you'll have mistakes.
One of the CPAs I spoke to on this podcast had mentioned doing that back in the day, like using a spreadsheet. And it just, now that there's, I mean, people have millions of transactions within a year. I mean, that's literally impossible to do on a spreadsheet when you have millions of transactions.
You're absolutely correct. We're seeing the amount of transactions our clients are doing. It's huge numbers. So definitely. So you have to have, you know, technology help you instead of, you know, making things harder.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the topic of, we were talking a little bit about, you know, regulatory agencies. What do you see the future of global regulatory approaches to crypto taxes? How do you see those changing?
I think that the main way they treat it right now will stay the same. It is, it's a taxable event when you exchange hands, with your crypto assets. What I would say is I think that more nuanced situations and more nuanced edge cases will be treated differently. I think that, you know, you have, and we already started to see that. So for example, stable coins, I think that will be treated a bit differently. And I think that you'll have a lot of those edge cases like airdrops, which, you know, a year ago, there was a lot of debate how you treat it, because a lot of people said, well, you know, I got an airdrop, but I didn't want it. So why should I pay taxes for it?
Right.
And that's a legitimate argument, because you don't really have a choice. When somebody sends you assets into your wallet, that's it. I mean, you don't really have a choice about it. And so those are legitimate concerns. And I think that, you know, again, we're shaping up best practices as we go, and I think that we'll see more and more nuanced situations getting resolved, maybe in a different way than it's being treated right now.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Like when you think about airdrops, for example, and like you mentioned, people get airdrops all the time, and they may not have necessarily asked for them. I think in that situation, if you really look at that, it does make sense. So, okay, let's not maybe tax the person for acquiring that airdrop. But when they start utilizing the airdrop, then it's a whole different story. You know, like as soon as you utilize it, then you're taking ownership of that airdrop. And that's where, okay, if you're going to use a zero cost basis, well, then you're going to have to pay higher capital gains because you're using a zero cost basis. So
exactly. So even that small difference is still had, you know, at least 2 years of work and, you know, talking and making sure that the, you know, the IRS or the equivalent agencies around the world understand the difference between an airdrop and a simple deposit. And even that it has nuances inside it. So, you know, when you're talking about an on-chain airdrop, that looks one way, but a lot of exchanges actually deposit assets, which are airdrops or forks and so on, into your account. And so you'll need to distinguish between them and actual deposits, because they basically look the same. Mm-hmm. Or at least for kind of the API side of the exchange, or the reports you're withdrawing from the exchange. And so even a simple thing like that can have nuances to it. And although it seems very simple in the tech side of the blockchain industry, for people outside of it, you really need to explain to them what the significance of it, because it might vary tremendously. And you might need to kind of convince them that it's not necessarily what they're thinking. And obviously, you know, an agency like the IRS has a ton of people telling them all the time that it's not something they think of. So you need to be very clear in what you're saying and obviously have the proof to support it. And so I think we'll see a lot more nuanced, cases where best practices start to form around them.
Right. And I think that's where, when even just crypto users are reporting their taxes, one of our previous podcast guests had mentioned he prefers over-reporting. So over-reporting in the sense of giving a lengthy explanation for why you're doing something, for why you're categorizing this as this, or why this is taxable and this is not taxable. Just giving that to the IRS, even if they don't ask for it. And I mean, maybe that's not what everybody should do, but you know, he's a crypto CPA and he suggested that over-reporting is never a bad thing. Because then they have the information too. It helps you and it helps, you know, the industry.
And again, I mean, platforms like Blocks in those situations really help, because we are a lot of the time implement best practices baked into the software. And so, instead of knowing and keeping track of all of the different cases and all of the different best practices, when you use technology, you already have it baked in. Again, I'll give you the QuickBooks example. You know, with QuickBooks, when you want to pay a salary to one of your employees, you don't really need to have all of the things you used to do, you know, from the accounting point of view and so on. There's a simple button, you know, choose the name of the person, how much you paid, and that's it. QuickBooks does everything behind the scene for you. And that's basically technology taking something that was formed and became best practice, implemented it into the software, and all of a sudden it's so much easier to actually do that instead of going around and, you know, doing all of the journal entries and so on. I think the same thing will happen, and we're already seeing that. Something happens with, you know, platforms like Blocks, things that are becoming best practices we implement inside the system, and it helps a lot with for everyone.
Yeah, interesting. And just one last question. I'm curious, do you think that something like a de minimis exception is likely? And do you think that it would help to encourage adoption?
That's a really good question. I guess that, you know, if it will become that where, you know, people are using Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of the big coins to actually pay for little things, mm-hmm. Then, you know, just for, you know, practicality, maybe we'll have those guidance. I personally don't think that, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum are very good at buying a cup of coffee. I really don't think they're solving any friction there. I think they're amazing in other things, but, you know, buying a cup of coffee, you can do that with your credit card. I don't really see the advantage of running, a point of sale for Bitcoin, for example, just to accept Bitcoin for that cup of coffee. But I guess it's reasonable. I think that if we'll get to that point, maybe we'll see those guidances coming out.
I do agree with you. I mean, it makes sense that, you know, what is the point? I mean, right now it's just kind of like a novelty, and it's great because it does encourage adoption that, like, hey, if you can go to Starbucks and buy a cup of coffee with Bitcoin, it encourages the validity of cryptocurrency, and it encourages adoption. But to your point earlier, where you had mentioned 10 years down the line, these 13 and 14 year olds that are into crypto, it's going to be very common for them to have a regular bank account and a crypto wallet. Maybe then that discussion will be a little bit more relevant. Definitely. Because, you know, they'll have their crypto wallet and maybe they don't have any money in their bank account and they just want to go and buy, you know, a gift card, or they want to go and buy a coffee or something like that, and they don't have cash but they got crypto.
I would love to be in that world where, you know, everyone buys cups of coffee with Bitcoin. That would be awesome.
Right, it would be awesome. All right, cool. Well, hey, I really appreciate the information that you shared with us today. I really liked the comparison between social media and crypto. I think that was a great comparison, and I appreciate you sharing your information with us. If any of our listeners would like to get in touch with you, or if they want to find out more about Blocks and what Blocks does, how can they reach you, and where can they learn more about Blocks?
Very, very simple. Go to blox.io. You know, visit our website, see all the information there. And obviously, if you want to drop an email and make an inquiry, go ahead.
All right, Alan. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Yep. All right, everybody, thanks for listening to the Bitcoin Taxes Podcast. Be sure to stay tuned for more great episodes about cryptocurrency and taxation.